This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Ford's rollout of the new Bronco was one of the marquee online events of the summer. Millions of people tuned in for either the online reveal, some of the network coverage, or caught a piece of the vast advertising blitz. As one of the most iconic Fords, the Grand Dam of SUVs was reborn for a new generation of consumers. Ford also commissioned a new podcast to tell stories about the Bronco.
The new Ford Bronco for 1966. A rough, tough, go-anywhere, climb-anything sports car.
So as they are developing the Bronco, the Mustang is the sport pony, and the Bronco is going to be the sport utility pony.
That phrase, sport utility pony, often got replaced with sport utility vehicle. And that was the founding of an acronym, SUV, that now describes more than half, well more than half, of the vehicles being produced in America.
And the mind behind that podcast is none other than Sonari Glinton. You know him as a journalist born and raised in the Midwest who spent many years working in Michigan, covering a range of issues, including economics and the auto industry, for public radio and elsewhere. These days, he's in L.A. and is the executive producer of Delight Media. Sonari Glinton, welcome to Stateside.
It's a pleasure.
Do you ever drive a Bronco?
Have I ever driven a Bronco? Not the new ones, no. I'm trying to think, but yes, I definitely have a Bronco 2 and then the first generation Bronco. Those are very, very popular. They're amongst the most expensive vintage automobiles because relatively few of them were made. And if you think about it, no one who bought a Bronco in the late 60s put a tarp over it and put it in the garage and was like, I'm going to make money off of this thing.
Yeah.
So they're very valuable.
They're like the hipster turntable of Broncos.
Well, yeah, that's the real reason why Ford is going there, right? I saw a Bronco that was $300,000. Like I said, this is the antique car market. Let's not make it into hipsters, because what it really is that in the antique or vintage car world, it used to be, you know, middle-aged dudes who wanted muscle cars or sports cars, right? But in the last decade or so, we've seen an influx of women and younger buyers in the antique or vintage car world, and they're buying SUVs and pickup trucks. And again, like I said, those things have already an innate value because nobody's grandfather had an F-150 that they thought they were going to sell, you know, 40 years later. Right? They were just going to run them into the ground. And so I believe that Ford looked at this universe of people buying new antique Bronco bodies, buying used or vintage Broncos for hundreds of thousands of dollars, and being like, we don't have a genuine 4x4. And that to me is an amazing part of, you know, what this conversation is, which is, I think, is finally the Detroit automakers are looking at what people are desiring, right? Instead of, you know, making another car because it has an E at the front of it.
Right. You opened the podcast with this most beautiful, evocative narrative of this guy named Mike who's recalling his childhood and his uncle, the fun uncle, who does all of the things that your parents don't really want you to do, and the stories of the Bronco that they drove across backcountry Colorado, and Mike ultimately inheriting the car and fixing it up.
I was 13 years old, so I had just finished middle school, and my parents thought it'd be a good idea for me to go out and spend the summer with my uncle.
That's Mike Lavanino. He's now almost 60, but he still remembers the summer he spent in the mountains with his uncle Rima.
He was really, really cool. He was the uncle that every kid wanted and no parent kind of wanted to have. he would give you all the things an uncle should give you. I mean, for one of my Christmases, he gave me a gerbil. He always gave us water guns and water balloons and everything your father or your mother really doesn't want flying around the house.
They spent the summer of 1974 crisscrossing Colorado in a Bronco.
We would go over some of the passes, Mosquito Pass, I can remember vividly. We also went out looking for mushrooms quite often. It was a great mushroom year. He used to dry mushrooms. They were Italian, so we used to use them in spaghetti sauce and things like that. So we were always in the Bronco.
And it's just such a gorgeous summer sun-drenched story of the Bronco mystique, you know, the ruggedness, the nostalgia vibe, and this romance of death and rebirth that mirrors the Bronco's own story. But Sonari, I mean, this is also a vehicle that people put snowplows on, that people, you know, installed giant woofers in the back and cruised around their neighborhoods in and put groceries and golden labs in the back of. How is it that this one vehicle has such a marvelously adaptable persona?
Well, you know, if you think about it, you know, the Bronco and its brethren came about, you know, from World War II vets who were used to driving Jeeps. And, you know, International Harvester came out with a Scout in the 50s or early 60s, and then the Bronco. And that was kind of it, right? You could have a Jeep, you could have an International, you could have a Scout, and maybe you could have a Bronco. And it wasn't the consumer didn't really catch up until literally the mid to late 90s. Mm-hmm. And what the Bronco was supposed to be was goes over all terrain. They wanted to call it the GOAT. And a vehicle that did everything, that was rugged and those things. And when we realize that's what the aspirational image of a lot of buyers is, right? It is, you know, I'm a tough woman who gets things done. Right? I take care of my family, I can haul, I can do all of these things. I can put the soccer team in the back or tow a boat. And I think that when we, like, that idea that a vehicle can be all things for one family is not really true. I wish that people didn't think that way sometimes. But the Bronco represents something, I think, aspirational, kind of the way that we thought about the frontier and the Wild West. You know, it's a very important part of the American spirit, which is forging a new path, making something new, going off-road, creating your own rules. And I think that that's a part of what the Bronco symbolizes.
You spend a fair amount of time solving the mystery of why the Bronco went away, which it turns out is a little bit more complicated answer than sales. I'm hesitant to ask you to spool it out here because the way that you tell it in the podcast is such a wide-ranging, unexpected tale that involves Iceland and the Detroit uprising and OPEC and just a whole slew of other things. But is there a short answer that you can give us for why the Bronco was discontinued?
Stupidity.
Didn't know what they had, huh?
Well, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, isn't that Detroit, though? I mean, really? In like, when I say Detroit, I mean the Detroit
industry. Yeah, right. Yeah.
It is, you know, we created this thing. We created a whole class of car, whether it's the muscle car or the sedan or the pickup truck or one of those things, right? And, you know, you think about the 90s, there was a lot of different corporate priorities for a company like Ford. They ended up buying brands like Jaguar and Land Rover. And, you know, and what we've had in the last 10 to 15 years is a shakeout where it's the, you know, Ford has sold off all of those brands and has gone back to the core. It's even gotten rid of a bunch of cars. The same has happened at General Motors and Chrysler, where it's like, who are we? What do we represent to the consumer? But why the Bronco went away, I think, is it wasn't a shiny object anymore, right? And that is often what the corporate chieftains do, right? And I think that in the last 20 years or so, the F-150 has done so well, Ford is just sort of like, well, since we make over 90% of our profits on the F-Series truck, why should we do anything else? And as things went along, they looked and saw 60% of the vehicles are SUVs. And for those of us who right now, especially in this pandemic, it seems like good timing, a lot more people are going off-road. Mm-hmm. A lot more people going camping right at this moment, right? Mm-hmm. People are buying $300,000, like I said, Broncos. And if you're a car company, you look at that and you're like, oh, we had a good thing going. Maybe we should bring it back. And it says something about the nature of the industry that it took a quarter of a century a quarter of a century of dedicated Ford designers, marketers, all those people to convince the folks at top that this was something viable. And I think that that's almost more of a story to me, which is the skunk works that existed to reintroduce this vehicle. And what an uphill battle you have to just come up with a decent idea in a gigantic company like Ford or General Motors or Chrysler.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Sonari Glinton. He's hosting a new podcast called Bring Back Bronco about the history of the iconic Ford truck. He's also a longtime journalist and public radio producer. You know, for some people who maybe aren't big car people, what they know of the Bronco is that O.J. Simpson was in one of them when he was pursued on live television down the 405 in L.A., mm-hmm. Oh, which, by the way, set up a seminal moment for America's conversation on race and power. You made an intentional decision to revisit that incident, and I was wondering if you could tell us about why you decided to do that.
It would have been, no one would have taken this podcast seriously if we had talked about the Bronco and hadn't talked about O.J. Simpson and what happened to the brand after that, right? Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have done the show, right, if we weren't going to talk about O.J. Because that white Bronco is seared in the memories of people like me. I was working at Ford inside of a Ford plant as a college student during the slow speed chase. And that's what I think that one of the things that we tried to do in this podcast was, you know, is a product that's as big and as expensive as a vehicle, when it's made in Detroit, when it's designed in Detroit, it's connected to the heart of America and what's going on at the time. And it's not a surprise that the uprisings in Detroit, the OPEC, the denouement of the classic Detroit that we think of would all play a role in the story of the Bronco. I mean, there is, you know, I am the third generation car person in my family who's had a career connected to cars. That is not unusual if you're a black person in the middle class. These companies touch African Americans and they touch America in a way that we don't always acknowledge. And I think that peeling back to see, oh, it's not just a product, right? It's a product that represents in many ways freedom and in many ways economic freedom. And think mm-hmm. about even in the even when you look at it in the that, you know, an accused murderer and his friend are fleeing, there's that's the one top line that you see. But then the vehicles represent what it has for so many African Americans, which is freedom, right? That was a powerful thing that was happening despite the horror that happened to Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman. Like, you know, it's not a surprise to me that a vehicle would be connected to some of the most iconic events in American history. And you can do it with many other vehicles, right? You can do it mm-hmm. with a Lincoln. Yeah, we could have done this with Lincoln and seen how, you know, John F. Kennedy was killed in one and et cetera, et cetera. Like these, they play such a role in our lives. Why wouldn't we talk about them? And I think that exploring what they mean and how they're built and what the companies were thinking is truly fascinating and goes way beyond being a car person. It's like, you know, last night I watched a documentary about video games followed by a documentary about the Barbie doll. They didn't spend $1 billion on the Barbie doll, right? You know
wow.
what I mean? You know, they don't send, right? It's like, but we will eat up, I mean, great documentary on the Barbie doll, right? We'll eat up, you know, all of that. And I believe that this is way closer to the heart of who we are as, whether it's Midwesterners or people or African Americans or just Americans.
You point out that Detroit, as the city that gave birth to the Bronco, was at the center of industrial America at the time the Bronco was conceived. It was the center mm-hmm. of political America in a lot of ways, certainly the center of musical and cultural America. In the long tale of how the Bronco came back, what does modern day Detroit have to do with the rebirth of the Bronco?
Well, I think the idea of rebirth is a narrative that we're going to be probably hearing about Detroit for the next half century. this vehicle actually sort of, in my mind, represents a rebirth of the auto industry in an interesting way. Mm-hmm. Going local, the auto industry has gotten more local. Build the cars where you sell them and listen to the consumer. That's one of the things that the auto industry is doing. But what you see is the engineers, the designers, all those folks who are living in Detroit and watching this renaissance, watching a renaissance in Detroit, grappling with a new city and seeing, oh, we have essentially these new car companies, right? And instead of running from their past, it's looking to see what is in the DNA of this company, what's in the DNA of this, these brands that can see us through to a future. And I think that that is something that is very Detroit.
Yeah.
Is that we have a heritage, and how can we make that heritage match with the present? And I think there are a lot of people doing that with products in Michigan and with the automakers. But I think really, really, whenever I set foot in Detroit, I think of the decades that I've been there and the sheer opportunity that you feel. And you don't see it like, and that's something I get excited about. And I say to folks all the time that if I was 24 and you asked me would I want to go, I would say Detroit. Because it's as exciting to me, as challenging as it is, as difficult as it is, you know, post-bankruptcy of the auto industry, all those things, that there is a rebirth happening. And we're not going to get help from other folks. We're going to have to roll up our sleeves and do this for ourselves. And I think that that's really, I don't think that you would have gotten that ethos in a Toyota, right? Because that's not the ethos of that brand. You wouldn't have gotten in Mazda. But roaring back and thinking of freedom and reclaiming a heritage that's over 100 years old, I think that that's an opportunity for the car industry.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sonari and I will continue our conversation and talk about the many ways that race has penetrated our society and his work over the years.
Bronco. Bronco. Ford Bronco. First four-wheel drive sports car, blazing a new trail of excitement. The new Ford Bronco for 1966. A rough, tough, go-anywhere, climb-anything sports car. Choice of powerful six or big new 200-horsepower V8 engine. Clear out snow in four-wheel drive. Cruise down a road in two. Two-wheel drive without annoying whine. Smooth as silk on paved roads, Ford's new Bronco gives you synchronized shifting. Velvet smooth coil spring drive. Bronco Roadster, built for fun. Bronco Sports Utility, a do-anything workhorse. Bronco Wagon, family carry-all. Name of Bronco, a new V8 Bronco at your Ford dealer.
This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. Let's continue our conversation with Sonari Glinton. He's the host and producer of a brand new podcast called Bring Back Bronco, The Untold Story, released by Ford about the iconic truck. And he's also a longtime journalist with extensive experience in radio and podcasts. I wanted to talk to you about something else while we have you. I was curious about what it's been like for you to see where the country is right now. We're at a time when there is a huge conversation right on the front burner about representation in journalism and in public media. And in my lifetime, you were the first Black reporter I remember leaving the network and saying, you know, this is not working. You know, there have to be changes. And I just wondered what it's been like for you to watch many stations and multiple big players in the industry having to figure out where they stand with respect to Black workers and other people of color.
You know, not to name drop, but I'm working on a project with Quincy Jones. And when I was leaving public media, I've had the opportunity to hang out with him and hang out with, you know, groups of all Black creators. And that feeling of being around professional African Americans who were getting things done and doing things stood in stark relief to me for stations and my life in stations. You know, I worked at WUOM, Michigan Radio, you know, where there's one other black person in the building. You know, I worked at WBUR, first black full-time reporter in its history. Same thing at WBEZ, the first black reporter, the only black male reporter on Planet Money, the only black male reporter on NPR's business desk. And honestly, that translation sort of got to me, right? And the thing that Quincy Jones said to me, which was really interesting, is don't become a prisoner of your dreams. When you are in a situation where you're frustrated or upset or angry, it's usually because you're thinking too small. And that idea of wrestling, you know, a public media station into understanding what it means to be a gay black man or all those things, I didn't feel a need to do that when there are people out there in the audience who are desperate for us. We saw that with the DNC this week. You know, for instance, you know, I have said all of my career to folks that black women vote more. They go to church more. They buy more books, and they're more concerned about travel than any other demographic group. We know that to be true. They will eventually get a college education. You know, this and public media needs to realize that what makes me comfortable may not attract an audience, right? And for me, what I realized is I could be sitting around trying to convince, you know, a middle-aged or an elderly station director in the middle of the country or someplace like that, that I have value or that black women have value, or I can go create that value for myself. The one thing I love, you know, I worked at Michigan Radio, and those of you, you all remember Jen White, who now hosts
1A.
1A. You know, there's, I would rather jump on a landmine, right, than do anything that offended someone like her, right? Or Tanya Mosley or Michelle Norris. That in these organizations, what I feel about these women and being a minority is, you know, we can't be as free to express who we are because we're just visitors in these organizations. And I firmly believe that I believe in more public media, not less, right? I believe that we are, when we think about the model of public broadcasting, I know that a lot of folks in public media go, well, will black people support, you know, a station with donations? And I know that that's what people think. They know, I know, because they say that to me. And I know that I've gone to enough fried chicken dinners and church potlucks to know that we know how to pass the hat to get us the information that we need. And the reason people don't, black folks aren't listening to public media is not because they're stupid or not interested. It's because they don't hear themselves represented. Every stat that you have ever seen shows that more diversity means more efficient groups. They are more successful. Always, 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 always. And every time you see it, there's more money. Educated black women run things. They get things done and they want information. And all you have to do is not give them the finger, not turn them off. Open yourselves to them and have people that they can connect to on the air, in print, and online. And until you do that, until you conquer the entirety of your audience, don't come talking to me about the model's broken, you know?
Sonari Glinton is the executive producer of D-Lite Media, and also he can be heard right now hosting Bring Back Bronco, The Untold Story. Sonari, it's so awesome to hear your voice and to hear you chasing the dream in Los Angeles. Take care.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.